Anna refused to accompany them to the luncheon at Lion Corp. "There is too much that needs doing here," she declared. The servants of Tirnaskral had already given her the name Checha. "Hurry up," the first word of the Zulu language Anna had learned, and all of them had conceived for her a wary and growing respect. Sir Garry and Santan drove up the escarpment with Shasa on the seat between them, and as they pulled up before the sprawling homestead of Lion Corp, with its lovely thatched roof, the familiar, burly, bearded figure came limping swiftly down the front stairs to take both of Santan's hands in his.
"It's like having you back from the dead," Sean Courtney said softly. "Words cannot express what I feel."
Then he turned to take Shasa from Garry's arms.
"So, this is Michael's son."
Shasa crowed with delight, grabbed a double handful of the general's beard, and attempted to pull it out by the roots. Ruth Courtney, Sean's wife, in that period of her life beyond 40 years of age and below 50, when a magnificent woman reaches the zenith of her beauty and elegance, kissed Santan's cheek and told her gently, "Michael was a very special person to us, and you will take his place in our hearts." Waiting behind her was a young woman, and Santan recognized her immediately from the framed photograph that the general had kept with him in France. Storm Courtney was even more beautiful than her photograph, with skin like a rose petal and a mother's glowing Jewish eyes, but there was a pout to her lovely mouth, with the expression of a child indulged to the highest degree of discontent. She greeted Santan in French. "Comment vas-tu, chérie?" Her accent was atrocious. They looked into each other's eyes, and their dislike was strong, mutual, and clearly acknowledged by both of them. Beside Storm was a tall, slim young man with a serious mien and gentle eyes. Mark Anders was the general's private secretary, and Santan liked him as instinctively as she had disliked the girl. General Sean Courtney took Santan on one arm and his wife on the other and led them into the homestead of Lion Corp. Though the two houses were separated by only a few miles, they could have been worlds apart. The yellow wood floor of Lion Corp gleamed with wax. The paintings were in light, cheerful colours. Santan recognised a whimsical Tahitian scene by Paul Gauguin, and everywhere there were great bowls of fresh flowers.
"If you'll excuse Garry and myself for a few minutes, ladies, we'll leave young Mark here to entertain you."
Sean led his brother away to his study, while his secretary poured each of the ladies a cordial.
"I was in France with the general," Mark told Santan, as he brought her glass to her, "and I know your village of Mortom quite well. We were billeted there while waiting to go up the line."
"Oh, how wonderful to have a memory of my home," Santan cried, and impulsively touched his arm. And from across the drawing room, Storm Courtney, who was curled with an elaborately languid air on the silk-covered sofa, shot Santan a look of such undiluted venom as to make her exult silently.
"Alors, chérie, so that's the way it is?"
And she turned back to Mark Anders and looked up into his eyes and exaggerated her throaty French accent.
"Do you perhaps recall the chateau beyond the church to the north of the village?" she asked, making the question sound like an invitation to forbidden delights. But Ruth Courtney intuitively caught the whiff of gunpowder in the air and intervened smoothly.
"Now, Santan, come and sit by me," she ordered. "I want to hear all about your incredible adventures."
So Santan repeated, for the 50th time since her rescue, her carefully edited version of the torpedoing and her subsequent wanderings in the desert.
"Extraordinary," Mark Anders interjected at one stage. "I have often admired the Bushman paintings in the caves of the Drakensberg Mountains. Some of them are really quite beautiful, but I did not realize there were still wild Bushmen in existence.
They were hunted out of these mountains 60 years ago, dangerous and treacherous little blighters by all accounts, and I understood that they had all been exterminated. On the silk sofa, Storm Courtney shuddered theatrically.
I just can't think how you could bear to let one of those little yellow monsters touch you, chérie. I know I would have simply expired.
Bien sûr, chérie. And you would not have enjoyed eating live lizards and locusts either?
Santan asked sweetly, and Storm paled.
Sean Courtney stumped back into the drawing room and interrupted them.
Well, now, it's good to see how already you're one of the family, Santan. I know that you and Storm are going to be great chums. What?
Indubitably, Pater, Storm murmured, and Santan laughed. She is so sweet, your Storm. I love her already.
Santan chose unerringly the one adjective, sweet, that brought forth a blooming of furious roses in Storm's perfect cheeks.
Good, good. Is the lunch ready, my love?
And Ruth rose to take Sean's arm and lead them all out onto the patio where the table was set under a canopy of jacaranda. The very air seemed coloured purple and green by the sunlight through the blossom-laden boughs, and they might have been in an underwater grotto. The Zulu servants, who had been hovering expectantly, at a nod from Sean bore Shasa away like a prince to the kitchens. His pleasure in their smiling black faces was as obvious as their delight in him.
They'll spoil him, if you let them, Ruth warned Santan. Only one thing a Zulu loves better than his cattle, and that's a boy child. Now, will you sit next to the general, my dear?
During the luncheon, Sean made Santan the complete centre of attention, while Storm tried to look aloof and bored at the end of the table.
Now, my dear, I want to hear all about it.
Oh, God, Pater, we've just been over it all, Storm rolled her eyes.
Language, girl,
Sean warned her, and then to Santan. Begin on the last day I saw you, and don't leave anything out, do you hear? Not a single thing. Throughout the meal, Gary was withdrawn and silent, in contrast to his ebullient mood of the last weeks. And after the coffee, he stood up quickly when Sean said, Well, everybody, you must excuse us for a few minutes. Gary and I are taking Santan off for a little chat. The general's study was panelled in mahogany. The books on the shelves were bound in maroon calf, while the chairs were upholstered in buttoned brown leather. There were oriental carpets on the floor and an exquisite little bronze by Anton von Vaux on the corner of his desk. Ironically, a sculpture of a bushman hunter with his bow in his hand, peering out across the desert plains from under his other hand. It reminded Santan so vividly of Owa that she drew breath sharply. With his cigar, Sean waved her into the wing-back chair facing his desk, and it seemed to dwarf her. Gary took another chair to the side.
I've spoken to Gary. Sean opened, without preliminaries. I've told him the circumstances of Michael's death before the wedding.
He sat down behind his desk and turned his own gold wedding ring on his finger thoughtfully.
We, all of us here, know that in every sense but the legal one, Michael was your husband and the natural father of Michelle. However, technically, Michael is... He hesitated. Michael is illegitimate. In the eyes of the law, he is a bastard.
The word shocked Santan. She stared at Sean through the rising wreaths of cigar smoke while the silence drew out.
We can't have that. Gary broke it. He's my grandson. We can't have that.
No, Sean agreed. We can't have that.
With your consent, my dear, Gary's voice was almost a whisper, I should like to adopt the lad.
Santan turned her head towards him slowly, and he hurried on. It would only be a formality, a legal device to ensure his status in the world. It could be done most discreetly, and it would in no way affect the relationship between you.
You would still be his mother and have custody of him, while I would be honoured to become his guardian and do for him all the things that his father cannot. Santan winced, and Gary blurted, "Forgive me, my dear, but we have to talk about it. As Shauna said, we all accept that you are Michael's widow. We would want you to use the family name, and we would all treat you as though the ceremony had taken place that day." He broke off and coughed throatily. "Nobody would ever know, except the three of us in this room, and Anna. Would you give your consent for the child's sake?" Santan stood up and crossed to where Gary sat. She sank onto her knees before him and placed her head in his lap.
"Thank you," she whispered. "You are the kindest man I know. You have truly taken the place of my own father now."